are listening to Casterbis. My name is Christian Corley, and with me is James McLean. And this is a special podcast in which we will have a brief discussion, then probably talk about something completely unrelated or only tangentially related. Because there's been some bad news in the world of Doctor Who, because there have been two persons departed. The great actor David Warner, and I mean, it's very difficult to get better than great, but Bernard Cribbins probably fulfills that criteria. Both actors have recently deceased, and as they've both played key parts in Doctor Who in various ways over the years, they both have quite interesting relationships with the show and its wider media and spin-offs and things. So it's quite apt, I suppose, that we should discuss them both at the same time if it is in such bad circumstances. James, I thought we'd start with David Warner, who I remember first seeing in... I mean, I've seen The Omen, and I know he's in The Omen, but he first made an impression on me in Time After Time, which is a movie that you either know or you don't know. It's one of those sci-fi movies that try and it's difficult to explain Time After Time, because it attempts to do something interesting with a known property, I suppose. In this case, it's H.G. Wells, but also Jack the Ripper. I suppose there's a clear line of Time After Time through to something like Ripper Street, I suppose, or retelling those on, I suppose, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen did it as well. It's like taking those names and characters and representing them into sort of like mixed up adventures. Basically, H.G. Wells pursues Jack the Ripper to the 20th century, when the serial murderer uses the future writer's time machine to escape his time period. Obviously, nothing like that was ever going to happen in real life, but it makes a very interesting and weird film. Malcolm McDowell plays H.G. Wells, Mary Steenburgen is in it, and David Warner plays Jack the Ripper, or Dr. John Leslie Stevenson. Now, that's the first time I saw David Warner, and sort of being conscious of him, realizing how good he is. But over the years, he's done so many things. He's been in Star Trek a few times, hasn't he?
Yeah, that's where my memory, I think, first comes of him. Although it must be an earlier one, but yeah, Star Trek V, Star Trek VI.
He's done an awful lot of things over the years, but it's, in terms of Doctor Who, he was for years kind of like suggested as a doctor, wasn't he, by fans unrelated to casting. Who's your doctor? Let's have David Warner as the next doctor. Obviously, it never happened until 2003, when Big Finish, as part of their Unbound Doctor Who range, released a story called Sympathy for the Devil, in which he played the Doctor, an alternative third Doctor, and he was brought back for Masters of War a little bit later. And he's appeared in some Bernie Summerfield adventures as the Doctor as well. And I thought Sympathy for the Devil... I'm not, as regular listeners will know, I'm not hugely into the Big Finish stuff, but I remember thinking Sympathy for the Devil was really, really good. I remember listening to that one and the Derek Jacobi one around the same time, the name of which escapes me right now as well. But I remember thinking Sympathy for the Devil was really, really good. It was like, and I don't know, it had a bit of a freshness to it, because obviously you've got a different doctor and they can do something different with a different doctor who no one's ever heard of before, who has to adhere to the sort of general rules of being the doctor, but they can stretch it a bit or do something different with it. And they did that, and I think it really stands the test of time, that story.
It's kind of funny that it's okay to do that, but, you know, Chibnall does it. How dare he? But, yeah, I must admit, I don't think I've heard any of his Big Finish stuff, which is kind of surprising.
It's usually the other way around, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I mean, obviously it was neither of us who was the, it was Brian who was the Big Finish guy. But yeah, I'd say my memory of him comes from virtually everything else. And I was watching with a friend, I was introducing them to Babylon 5. Well, I am still doing a McLean cut and taking them through the series, removing ones which aren't necessary to make the series more manageable. And he was in one in the first series called Grail, where he plays a basically an elderly, I suppose, not a space hippie, but no, he's a man searching for the Grail. It's a sort of very pure spiritual journey. And again, his performance was just so so restrained and gentle. It just made it really enjoyable to watch. I thought, yeah, you've got to listen to this. I said to my friend, you've got to listen to this one, and you've got to watch it. Not just listen to it, you've got to watch it too. And I did. So I was just looking at his lineup of the things he's done in Doctor Who. There's a lot of stuff. Not just obviously as his Unbound Doctor.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was in Cold War as well, wasn't he? As Professor Grusenko on the submarine with the Ice Warrior.
Yes.
I mean, I would like to say he was exceptionally good in that, but actually that was one of a very rarely extremely well-cast episode from that era of the show, I think.
He was also in the Dreamland animation.
Oh, of course, yes.
I am looking at a browser just to confirm that my sudden skills at remembering things is not to do with any form of memory or research.
We never thought it was for a moment.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad to hear that.
Penny Dreadful was the thing I was thinking of earlier on. That
Penny Dreadful, that was a good show.
Which he was in. And there's an episode of Midsummer Murders that he's in called Death in the Slow Lane from 2012. Now, I guarantee you, I have watched that episode more than once, but I can't remember which one it is at the moment.
So he did some of the early adventures. He was a narrator for The Black Hole. He did some performances for the Companion Chronicles, as you said, his Mycroft Holmes for the Benny Summerfield, the Unbound Doctor. He was in an Eighth Doctor's Adventures as a Boston Schooner. You know, he's done a lot of stuff. Schooner. He's done a lot of stuff for Doctor Who. And then, vast amounts of the Benny Summerfield. Good Lord, and Jago and Lifer as well. And Torchwood. It's the list goes on.
Yep.
And I didn't realise I could press down and it would show me more.
That's how it works.
It does,
He's also in Big Finish's Doctor Who 60th anniversary in some capacity as well.
Okay, it's interesting. Yeah. So, I mean, he's one of those people who has a name which goes far beyond Doctor Who. I mean, obviously, as you said, the Omen being perhaps one of his most famous roles, but yes, he's just been there and done everything, and yet he's had a massive impact in Doctor Who, both specifically outside the show but also in the show as well.
It's a shame. He's one of those faces as well, and voices as well, very distinctive voice, but it's one of those ones that for those of us of a certain age, kind of has more of an impact. And of course, he was in Time Bandits as well as the voice of evil.
Oh God, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, and he was also in The Hogfather as well, I'd forgotten about.
He was very good at sort of switching between, as I say, in Babylon 5, he could play a very gentle, kind and sort of very restrained performance. And yet he could actually play Sonny Brain is Thinking Tron. You know, there's a lot of films where he could play something quite the opposite, and he could go across that spectrum really easily. And he nailed every performance, quite frankly.
David Warner was born on the 29th of July, 1941, and passed away on the 24th of July, 2022. Age 80, he'd studied at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts. His family released a statement. Over the past 18 months, he approached his diagnosis with characteristic grace and dignity. He will be missed hugely by us, his family and friends, and remembered as a kind-hearted, generous and compassionate man, partner and father, whose legacy of extraordinary work has touched the lives of so many over the years.
He was in Ripper Street as well.
Yep.
Having you just mentioned it.
I saw that as well, badly.
Penny Dreadful.
All of them. I was thinking as I read through that, I did mention it a moment ago, there's a scene in Terry Pratchett's Hogfather, which is one of only two decent adaptations of Terry Pratchett's work in my mind, certainly live action anyway, where Mark Warren is also in it as a character called Tea Time, only he insists it's pronounced Teatame. Anyhow, that's by the by. David Warner, he's the chief of the Guild of Assassins, basically. And there's a really good scene between the two of them. And both of them are very good actors. Mark Warren's playing this ridiculous character, so you think he's going to steal the scene almost. But it's David Warner's scene all the way through. It's very, very good. You barely see him again in the rest of the whole thing. But yes, it's very good. Such a good actor.
And of course, Ra's al Ghul. I forgot about him in the Batman, Superman animated adventures, the Bruce Timm stuff.
Ah,
he was Ra's al Ghul for that run of shows. Yes.
I mean, basically, if you threw a stick at IMDb, you would hit something that David Warner had been. I know you can't do that, but you would hit something that David Warner had been in, I think, wouldn't you?
If you could do that, but you can't. But yeah, no, it's really, really. It was quite a shock to see him passing away. As I think we've said before, there's that sort of horrible, weird, almost selfish feeling of shock that it's almost that it, because it's about you, that it's someone that has sort of suggested life or a connection all the way through your life suddenly disappears. It's as much about you going, oh, but what about me? That's someone who I used to watch. It's no longer here. How do I feel about that? There's that sort of horrible human nature of trying to reconcile your own mortality, I think, through the passing of people who you sort of had a very strong connection to in some way or another. In what you digest creatively.
And I guess that takes us to the second, I'm sorry to say, subject of this podcast, the great, never knighted, despite a few campaigns, Bernard Cribbins, who I share a birthday with. So I've, and you know, he's Bernard Cribbins. So I didn't even know until recently that I shared a birthday with him, but it has a nice sort of extra element of interest to someone of my age who watched him as a child. I was a child. He was on TV reading stories on Jack and Nori, or he'd pop up in films. He's in the second Cushing Doctor Who film. He is a kind of part of the fabric of late 20th century televisual culture in the UK, isn't he? And he sadly passed away.
I'm always a strong believer in when you sort of look back at people who have passed is to try and be honest about it rather than invoke some sort of caricature of splendor and wonder that, you know, everyone. I never really connected to Cribbins as a kid. There was just something about his, because he was known a lot for his sort of comedy back then, my memory of it anyway, and not in terms of being on shows as himself as much as when he was acting, and he just didn't, when he did Jack and Ori, I just wasn't interested. I didn't enjoy him in The Invasion of Earth as much as I enjoyed Roy Castle as a kid in The Daleks. It was, you know, he was on game shows and stuff, and I just never really, and he'd appear in stuff and be, oh, look, there's Bernard Cribbins. And, you know, I must admit, when I was very young, I used to really like the Wombles. But
yeah,
when it got to the 90s and suddenly it became a cult thing and suddenly it was all about Bernard Cribbins and, you know, the wonderful of the Wombles. And I was like, the Wombles are boring. And, you know, I just never really got it. And then I think when I got a little older and started seeing him, not so much, I think actually more for the performer and still, I think through Doctor Who, actually, to be very honest, through Doctor Who and sort of reading up on how he approached that and how people spoke of him and how he worked and then seeing some of his stuff and then going back to things like Dalek Invasion of Earth and suddenly seeing a performance there, which I hadn't really understood. And he suddenly became something far more, was greater impact with me in my old later life than in my younger life, where he was probably more visible because he seemed to be everywhere. And yet he didn't really touch me. I never really got the humor of the Carry On films, which he'd sometimes pop up in and And there was just something that just didn't really connect. He felt like sort of like someone that my grandmother would like. But when I got older, it's like, yeah. And, you know, then seeing him in Doctor Who, something which has, obviously, we have a personal connection to, and seeing the performances he gave in that was, you know, just shamed my dismissal of him for so many years. I'm like, yeah, this is a, you know, not just an incredible character, but an incredible actor.
Well, I think with Jack Inori, maybe he was unfortunate in that he became so reliable that he became furniture almost. And then when people like Rick Mayall come along, he's never going to be a comparison, is he? Not a strong comparison.
Yes, I do. I do hate to be upstaged by someone who sort of gets to the nub of it within a couple of sentences. But yes, that's absolutely it. He felt like part of the establishment as a kid. And then there was all these crazy people coming up at the time. You're totally right, like sort of Rick Mayall and watching the young ones. And yeah, he was just, he felt establishment to me. He was on the sort of television shows that my, my elders would watch, you know, the sort of quiz shows and the game shows. And, you know, the humour was slightly, you know, was a little too old fashioned for me at the time. And so I just don't think I really understood. Yeah, you're totally right. And then when you get past that, and that sort of edginess of the 80s and 90s suddenly actually becomes a little more awkward and perhaps not quite as clever as now as it was perhaps in the time. And I look and I just see this very clever man who knew his place, knew his work, very professional, delivered exactly what he was meant to deliver whenever he was meant to deliver it. And yeah, it's just crazy. I mean, it's funny, isn't it? You think of that last shot of him in End of Time with the little salute he does, and, you know, out of all of Doctor Who, that's probably the biggest gif I've ever seen in terms of Twitter. That resonated with so many people to the point where it irritated me because I loved it. I thought it was, you know, my thing. And it was suddenly everyone's thing because it was just such a great little moment, a great little gesture.
The comedian Simon Evans, who you may be aware of, dear listener, tweeted, "All men are mortal, but sometimes you start to hope that the Reaper has somehow made a clerical error, and as long as no one draws attention to it, a curiously ageless and weightless figure from your childhood might have somehow slipped through for good." Bernard Cribbins was 93 when he passed away, and like David Warner, has recorded scenes for upcoming Doctor Who material. Unlike James, I'm slightly more affectionate towards Bernard Cribbins in my childhood, simply because of that absolutely excellent episode of Fawlty Towers, which I think is probably my favourite, in which he approaches Basil Fawlty and states that there's a TV show he wants to watch, and then utters the memorable line, "Is it possible to reserve the BBC Two channel for the duration of this televisual feast?" Which absolute, nobody talks like that. And he plays it so absolutely straight, like he is this pompous little man approaching another pompous little man, essentially. And there's a battle of winds commences throughout the rest of the episode. It's already, the battle of winds has already started at that point, and it carries on through the episode. It is so such a good episode. It's the hotel inspectors, if you want to check it out. He is so good in that. And there's the other line when he attacks Basil Fawlty and says, "I'm not a violent man, Mr. Fawlty," after he's already decked him. It's such a good episode. I think it is my favourite Fawlty Towers, actually. And, you know, there's big ones like The Keeper and the Corpse and the one with Joan Sanderson where she's deaf and the Germans and the one with the guy from Empire Strikes Back and the one with Ken Campbell as well. In fact, any of them. But I think the Bernard Cribbins one is probably my favourite Fawlty Towers.
It's nice when you see the dialogues which pop up. There's a dialogue between Davis and John Sim over Cribbins with
yes, I saw. Did John you see Sims. That? I saw John Sims.
Where he was sort of saying, you know, how Cribbins would say, sort of say, "Well, you are a," after their scenes, and there was such a. And then Davis was obviously talking about some of the little bits, which like the paint gun, which was allegedly Cribbins' idea to bring the paint gun for the Dalek.
Yes.
And it's that's always really interesting is when you start to see those little bits of insights into a larger-than-life character. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting seeing him back for the for the you know,
well, for whatever it is, because we still really don't know what it is,
no,
do we?
No, we don't. That's true. But I think that's great. I think it's these sort of posthumous performances. I think that that's kind of, so it's kind of a nice thing that when someone's passed, that they're that in itself almost becomes a moment where, you know, the becomes a sort of an epitaph to their career, to their work. When you get that something fresh, something new, which I suppose what I'm trying to say is it takes the finality, I think, a little out of passing.
Yeah.
There's still some more to see of someone, or there's more for someone to give rather than to be seen. But for that personality to give to the world, I think that's kind of cool. Very few of us are fortunate to have that. But yes, he certainly deserves it.
Bernard Cribbins was born on the 29th of December 1928 and passed on the 27th of July 2022. He was born in Oldham in Lancashire, and as well as being an actor from Doctor Who and That Fawlty Towers episode and voicing the Wombles and Albert Perks in The Railway Children, he was also a recording artist and had two hits, The Hole in the Ground and Right Said Fred. Appeared in the Carry On series and the comedy film Two Way Stretch. I should also point out that he was, you know, the producer of his records was George Martin. George Martin was a comedy record producer before he got the Beatles. He did the Goons and various other comedians, and those two Bernard Cribbins records. And another thing that's worth talking about is around 10 years ago, his sort of post Doctor Who for a few years, he was regularly filming a few miles down the coast from me for a CBeebies show called Old Jack's Boat. Now, my two eldest, they're now 11, and they grew up watching Old Jack's Boat. And I had to kind of break it to them the other day that he was no longer with us, and it didn't go down very well. I was really upset. I thought maybe I shouldn't tell them, and then I did tell them, because there's one, the last episode of Old Jack's Boat is kind of final, as it were, in some ways. So, and that's the last episode that they ever watched of the show. So for it to be brought into real life for them was maybe something I should have kept quiet, really. Unfortunately, I didn't. We've already talked about how much David Warner did. My dad was exclaiming at the number of movies that David Warner had made the other day. I don't think that Bernard Cribbins has made that many films, but he's certainly done much more in terms of film and television combined than Mr. Warner did. Not that it's a competition or anything, but it's just in terms of his complete kind of ubiquity and recognisability. Everything from Wurzel Gummidge to Doctor Who and Coronation Street and Last of the Summer Wine and, oh my god,
Space 1999.
Good God, yeah.
Brian the Brain, yeah. The classic episode, Brian the Brain. Yeah,
he was supposed to be in a recreation of a Dad's Army episode a few years ago, but he left the production in February 2019, citing personal reasons, and was replaced with Timothy West. I meant to watch that, and I still haven't seen that. I was really interested in how that would have been done, and something happened, and I forgot about it. So that's interesting. That's one with Kevin McNally as another Doctor Who link there. There's Kevin McNally as Mannerin.
I didn't know he had his own TV show.
Cribbins. Oh, Cribbins, yes.
69-70.
Yeah, everyone had, there was lots of people had a show like that in those days, wasn't there? You know, Cliff had one, and Dusty Springfield had one, and Lulu had one, and Cilla Black had one. They all had one. At some point, but Mark Bolan had a TV show. David Bowie didn't. But anyway, yeah. So he was very much a, and this reiterates what I was saying before, he was very much part of the entertainment establishment, wasn't he? And
yeah.
I totally understand why you would have not felt a particular affinity with that.
Yeah. Yeah, and at the same time, it's kind of a shame that one didn't. I think when one is a young lad and is growing up in eras of resistance to establishments, you overlook some of those strong pieces which you are immediately resisting. Aye, those are the days.
Indeed. In 2018, Bernard's autobiography, which I think I have on my reading list to do, Bernard, who, 75 years of doing just about anything, was published. A successful social media campaign in 2022 led to his autobiography being recorded as an audiobook, but it was believed to be incomplete at the time that he passed away. So that's a little bit of a shame, isn't it? It is a shame. It's also, as anyone who became aware of the social media campaign, almost inconceivable that they hadn't already recorded it, because if there was one person you would expect to be reading their autobiography for an audiobook, it's someone whose voice is known to millions of people across the country, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's almost like Martin Jarvis recording, writing an autobiography, and he not then recording the audiobook, or someone else with a hugely recognizable name from voice work or TV work or anything.
I wonder if they will finish it off with someone else, someone like David Tennant or something to fill in the bits, which...
Yes.
I don't know how much was recorded.
No, we don't know how much was recorded, if any was recorded.
True.
So maybe someone else will read it. We'll maybe find out one day, I suppose. I always find that audiobooks are very good if they're read by the right person. And if there is something wrong with the voice of a person, it just doesn't suit the story at all. I just cannot listen to the rest of it, story or non-fiction, actually. It has to be the right voice for me. I don't know if I'm alone with this.
The silence suggests you are.
Indeed, it does. If you, dear listener, do have any thoughts on the audiobooks and the suitability of voices to them, do let us know.
No, they're listeners. They're not speakers. They're listeners.
Right, that's fine. Okay, fair enough. But they can write, and they can leave
they can,
a review
yes, they can write. They
on
can
Apple
write
Podcasts
us, yes.
If they've enjoyed this podcast.
That's fine, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. It's probably worth noting as well that Bernard Cribbin served in the armed forces in Palestine 1945 to 1948.
Yeah.
He had such an amazingly varied life and career. I could literally sit here and record a podcast about his entire Wikipedia entry. I'm not going to do that, because the point is, he had a fantastically interesting life, and his autobiography is, based on the cover blurb alone, is worth reading properly. He will be back in Doctor Who, as we stated, we think next year, but as we don't know exactly when that is, returning as Wilfred Mott, which itself brings up a whole number of questions about what happened in the final episodes of the 10th Doctor's adventures back in 2010. But obviously, people die all the time and actors pass away quite regularly. But Bernard Cribbins and David Warner are both quite interesting and unique in having those interesting relationships with Doctor Who. They obviously can't both be unique, but they both have unique relationships with Doctor Who and Doctor Who fandom, and their wider works are worth considering. So in the show notes, I'm going to link to their Wikipedias and their IMDb's, and I suggest you probably take the time to dip in to something that they've done that you haven't seen before. I can recommend Midsummer Murders, because that's a thing I tend to recommend to people. They've both been in Midsummer Murders at least once. So there's at least two episodes you can check out there. There's tons of things that you can watch if you want to appreciate their wider contributions to acting and mainstream entertainment, basically. You know, there is a slightly distasteful element to that. But then again, I mean, talk about people who have passed away quite recently is, I'm not entirely comfortable with it, but people that have made an impact on how we interpret the things that they've done and the works and the entertainment and, having this like deep interest in Doctor Who without calling myself or James, quote unquote, fans, is part and parcel of that. And it's really, really very sad that they've gone. But again, referring back to what I said, Simon Evans, the comedian's tweet earlier, you do kind of wonder if or hope that maybe someone does kind of sneak through. But on the other hand, as James kind of alluded to, we maybe unreasonably expect these people to not die. And unfortunately, it is the nature of existence that we are born and that we die.
I think it is a little bit, you know, we kind of hope they escape the mortal, you know, the mortality. But I think part of it is it kind of is a fear of our own world changing. It's an acknowledgement that things don't last and therefore we don't last. And I think there's something about that, which is very much a very self-centered human thing to see when these people pass away. It's scary.
Yeah, I mean, it is scary, but it also, as you say, it is self-centered. It's very human. It goes beyond, you know, Doctor Who or Star Trek or yes, whatever, yeah, doesn't definitely. It?
Well, yeah, like Bowie passing was quite a big one, you know, and Leonard Nimoy, you know, people who you've grown up with and therefore are as much part of, if your life is a canvas, it's like someone's peeling bits of your canvas away. And it's like, wait a sec, that's my canvas. They've always been there. I'm always going to be here. Ergo, they will always be here. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And I think that's why that can have quite a big effect on us as people.
Of course. Go on.
I was just going to say, because I think there is a certain thing where you'll see people go, well, you didn't know them. You know, don't make this about you. And it's like, well, yeah, that's true. We didn't know them, but you can't hide the fact that people can have a profound impact on your life without them knowing you. Or you knowing them, that can still have an impact. And at the same time, yes, I can understand sometimes you see on social media sort of responses which feel almost a bit too over the top, but we all deal with stuff in different ways, I guess.
Yeah. Just you mentioned Bowie before, and I think the interesting thing about Bowie, I mean, there's many, many interesting things about Bowie, but the most interesting thing about his passing was how he turned it into art.
Yeah. And yet at the same time, he had hoped to get another album out, as I recall.
Yeah.
So while Lazarus was very much about death in a lot of ways, he was a man who was very much hoping to get more life. He was always a man who was looking for life. I think there was quite a big fear of death, which is totally understandable, especially when you've won at life. Yeah. When you've won at life, then the only thing that's left is, you know, because he essentially had. Historically in the history books, he had a very happy relationship with his wife, as far as we're aware. He had a good relationship, as far as I'm aware, with his son David Jones. By the end of it, you know, he was an artist, he was a musician, he had a legacy. And it's just like, you know, then that must become a very frightening thing when it still won't stop things changing. So I think it was hard for him. It was hard for everyone. But yeah, I'm digressing because it is an interesting case. But yes, you're right. I think there was a weird thing of that last album coming out, obviously not long before he passed away, which again, a bit like Cribbins with the upcoming Doctor Who, it's almost that creativity of what they're known for, the art of what they're known for, sort of shines on a little bit longer than it would, you know, the most of us get.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
Yeah, it is. So, as mentioned, check out something with Bernard Cribbins and David Warner. Not necessarily, if you can find something that they were both in, you're winning. Otherwise, do it separately. And
Brian the Brain. Space 1999, Brian the Brain. Oh, Cribbins would like that. He would like that to be the recommendation.
Okay.
I'm sure he would, because I'm sure it's not it's been a while since I've seen it, and my memory is more on the discourse around it than it is actually on the episode, and I think it's probably worth the smile, which I'm sure he would bestow upon it.
There you go. We will be back for another show soon. Until then, it's goodbye from us.